Good morning and welcome to the Weldon Green podcast. Today I'm going to bring you a new episode of the Ask Weldon Show. You can check the show out live every day, 6:30 p.m. at twitch.tv/mindgamesweldon. And remember that everything in the Mind Games brand is supported by the Mac program, mindgames.gg/MAC. And you guys should use the code podcast as you're listening to the audio version of the show rather than the code that I share during the video. All right, let's hop into it. Good morning and welcome to the Ask Weldon Show, episode 236. Today I'm coming at you with a broken camera, which is just behind this substitute camera. I won't say replacement camera. This is not my replacement. This is just like a little Logitech webcam I had lying around. So it is my show camera for the day. And sorry for the more constrained field of view and any weird black bars that are going on, but that's what's happening today. And the show is a very exciting one because two of the questions I don't really have answers to fully, but I'm going to discuss what I know right now and how to get the answer. And no other big updates aside from that I had coffee this morning instead of tea, so I should be pretty wired for this show considering I usually fast until 8:30 a.m. Right now it's 5:30 a.m., so I've had and I usually stop eating around noon because I do time-restricted eating, so I don't have anything in my stomach, really. Generally speaking, obviously I still have stuff in my intestines, but that would be, let's see, yeah, 12 hours, and then another 5 hours, so 17 hours, empty stomach by now, and full of coffee. So I would imagine that makes it somehow faster for the caffeine to get in your blood. I don't really know. Anyway, I better drink some water. My hair is appropriately set up for the show, as you can see. It's pretty hilariously morning hair. This is what you get when you go to sleep with wet hair every single night because you have to take a shower because it's so freaking hot here because it's 200-year high, temperature high in Finland right now, you know, which means it's basically 60 degrees Fahrenheit, 20 degrees Celsius for you Euro people. That's a joke. Obviously, it's hotter than that. Whatever. Anyway, let's move on with the show, shall we? All right, the first question today comes from Adrian. Let's listen in.
Hey, Weldon. I find that whenever I reach a big goal, like finally reaching plat in League of Legends, or meeting big deadline at work, I don't get that big celebratory feeling. I'm about to hit another big accomplishment by finishing my MBA, and having worked so hard at it, I expect to feel accomplished. But I know I won't. Why do I feel this way? And is there a mind shift that I may need? Thanks.
All right. Thank you so much for the question, Adrian. You guys may have noticed my broken camera on that shot. I was playing with it to entertain you guys. Okay. So how do you learn to celebrate? Why is celebration important? And is it important also? So first of all, Stoicism would say, no, you shouldn't learn to celebrate, that you should also learn not to be disappointed by defeat. Or by losing, or by not accomplishing something, that you should be stoic regardless. So when something good happens, you should take it with an equanimitable attitude. And when something bad happens, it should be equal to something good happening. And neither thing should fluster you in terms of your emotional state. But we know that that's not how it works. Most people just suck at celebrating, and then they're also really bad at staying equanimable. Is that the right number of syllables in that word? Anyway, they're really bad at staying stable when they're losing, right? Everybody just kind of like focuses on their defeats and doesn't do anything about their celebrations of success. So what I prefer is to take the more kind of Buddhist approach than the more Stoic approach, which is that you should push your emotions toward the upper end of the spectrum. You should focus on joy and compassion and the moment, and you should celebrate life, and you should try to not be swayed by like defeats and losses and things like that, and kind of like be depressed and feel grief in that way. Although it's okay to feel grief, but you shouldn't feel grief by existential crises. But then you should be able to feel emotion towards the happy end of the spectrum. And that is very in opposition with this Greek Stoic philosophy of like cutting out and annihilating all emotion completely. Okay? Or at least in my perception it is. I'm not a Buddhist and I'm not a Stoic, so my interpretation is from the outside looking in. Okay. All right. So then how do you go about doing that? Well, celebrating accomplishments is a pretty simple three-step process. First, you have to anticipate, and then you have to focus on the moment, and then you have to celebrate. So what I would recommend is that we know from psychological studies that it's your anticipation of the event or the reward or the thing that's going to happen that's great that actually builds up the joy in your life that you can experience, like anticipation for a vacation, for example, or anticipation for like a big event that you're accomplishing that gives you that kind of builds up this emotional, I would say, charge. And then it's the actual focusing on the present during the actual event that gives you the ability to kind of release that charge into your, like, into the moment, into that life. And then it's the meaningful gestures that you build into it symbolically that give that moment meaning in your history. Okay, and this is more of like that last thing I didn't really pull in from psychology, right? From psychological studies or anything. That's more of like a Nietzsche kind of symbolism of man, maybe Jung, I would say, perspective. But I think it's probably rather important to celebrate at least if I observe anecdotally in my own life, it seems like the symbols that and the myths that you create from these events are the things that you then can carry forward and that have meaning in your future. So I would say, first, you should learn to anticipate things that you want to celebrate. So you spend time either writing it, visualizing it, being excited for it, talking about it, whatever it is. It's not going to jinx you if it's something that you're trying to accomplish. You can always cash it in terms of, it would be awesome if I'm able to accomplish this, to your friends when you're talking about it, or to your family, or you can not talk about it in public and only talk about it with, a reserved few people, or you can only talk about it to your journal. Whatever it is, you practice anticipating it. And then comes the actual moment, right? And it's so important to practice mindfulness and to be aware of the moment and to just fully saturate yourself in the presence of the moment, because this is what you've been waiting for. And if you spend all your time anticipating and then you want it to be over so you can run up to Instagram and like put all the photos up, that is bad. Like, just celebrating the impact the event has on your online identity and persona is like not the thing, right? In fact, I don't have a lot of pictures of the things that I do. Like, when I'm excited to go to the beach after work, right, and I go with the kids, okay, partly it's because I have kids and I'm at the beach, so I like don't have time to take pictures. But if I have time to take a picture, usually it's because I'm not really focusing on the moment and enjoying it and spending time kind of in it. So it's okay to step out of that, take a picture, and go back into it, but like just be intentional and don't spend all your time Instagramming. And I know for men this isn't as much of a problem, and I'm sorry to make the kind of sexist statement, but like, if you look at school-age kids, and I have a lot of school-age people in my audience, it's really clear that there's this division line between psychological kind of like issues with online gaming and with social networks and the image networks, like, what is that one with the dancing, like Musical.ly and Instagram, unfortunately, are impacting girls a lot more than they are boys, and vice versa for the video games, like the getting sucked into like the addictive feedback loops in video games, also for boys. So there's something going on here gender-wise. I think that plays out at the adult level a little bit. Obviously, it's a bell curve. I'm obsessed with Instagram. I would be the first person to admit it. And Instagramming things and putting up pretty pictures and showcasing my life. So like, we're not talking about like a divide here. We're talking about a bell curve graph that plays out more in gender disparity in young girls in school age in the developed world, if that makes sense. So anyway, yeah, don't get swept up in the Instagram moment and kind of focus on the moment, and then celebrate. Okay, then you want to things like very simple things, symbolic things like a toast, or something that you say every time you accomplish something great for yourself, or something that you do, like you take yourself out to dinner afterwards, like as a private moment to you. You date yourself for a night, or you buy yourself a new shirt for every important event. Whatever it is, like something that symbolically allows you to say this is to you, that this is important to you, that you can kind of carry into the future and turn into like a commemorative symbol in the mythology of your life, of your identity. That is what I would do to learn to celebrate accomplishments. Good luck, Adrian. Thanks for the question. Okay, question number two. No, play. There we go. There's the question. Okay, this one is from Alex, and I lost the audio. Here we go.
Hi, Weldon. My name is Alex, and I'm 26 years old. In my first year of college, I went through severe mental health.
Okay, I had the audio set for Adrian's question still, which was quiet, and I apologize to everybody for the headphone blah. But anyway, here's Alex again.
Hi, Weldon. My name is Alex, and I'm 26 years old. In my first year of college, I went through severe mental health issues and ended up failing out. I've since done a lot to heal, both physically and mentally. I have lost 90 pounds on a low-carb, high-fat diet and gone through CBT with a therapist. My passion, what has gotten me through these years of healing, was always video games, mostly World of Warcraft and League. My dream is to work as a game developer, and I'm finally in a place mentally where I know I'll be successful in going back to school. But I feel that I'm too old now, and even though I finish school, I won't be desirable enough to get a job in the industry. Should I go back to school for something safer, even though it may not be my dream job? Otherwise, do you have any tips?
Okay, Alex, thank you very much. Whoa! There's my water. Thank you very much for the question, and congratulations so much on your progress throughout the years. Congratulations, first of all, on discovering low-carb, high... Did you say high protein or high fat? I didn't hear. But anyway, that's fantastic. I like the low-carb, slow-carb diet. I think it's very good for modern living. And congrats on CBT. I hope that you keep that up. I know it's expensive. I don't do it because of the expense itself. But if I could, I would. I think ongoing CBT therapy is, or CBT, is one of the best things that people can do to kind of like develop themselves as people in an ongoing way. Whether they're healthy or not, whether they consider themselves healthy or not. All right, so game developer, how to become a game developer and you aren't just graduating from high school. So one of the benefits of going to college directly out of high school is that usually you don't have enough experience or knowledge to go directly into the career field and start working. And so it's good to kind of have a place to do a holding pattern while you're gaining more skills or more knowledge or more maturity in the case of the developed world. If however, you're already like a little bit more mature, you have a little bit more worldly experience, you have a little bit more capabilities and a little bit more motivation than your average 17, 18-year-old, then there is a lot more paths that are open. Okay, so one of them, of course, is going back to school. And that is, I want to say like that's kind of like the safe option, although it's really expensive and it's not really the best option in my opinion, because I think for something as unique as developing, that it's, I want to say that it's kind of like language learning. So when you go to a foreign country and you're learning a language through immersion, it's super great to have that baseline of grammatical skills like laid down from study so that you can accelerate your learning of the language. So when I see people, for example, who are super motivated to learn Finnish and they've studied Finnish grammar in school and they're bad at Finnish, right? But they've studied the grammar and then they come here and they immerse themselves in it. They learn Finnish much more rapidly. They've put down that 2-year baseline, you know, that 1-year baseline, and they have the structure there, but they've never greased the wheels. They've never gone into an immersive environment and really had to rely on Finnish. And so then when they really activate the language center of their brain and the grammar comes to fruition, they kind of like jump ahead of the average learning curve. However, the 2 years, the 4 years that they spent learning the language kind of in the classroom feels a little bit wasted to me and to them, because at the time, it's just kind of like they're not really learning the language in practical use, right? They're learning it kind of like as a concept, and they're kind of studying it in the school environment, maybe with a Finnish teacher even, sure, or a Finnish language group, whatever, but it's not like living life where you do it in this immersive environment and you have to rely on it fully. On the contrary, I see people who, you know, come and they don't have that like grammatical laydown, and they also don't have the motivation, and they can't learn the language at all. You know, they just spend all their time avoiding it. But then there's the people who are motivated, right? And for these people, it doesn't matter whether or not they had the past education in language and grammar. It doesn't matter if they had any history with the language at all. They come and they're motivated and they throw themselves in the immersive environment and they learn the language very rapidly and they're super competent, like as fast as people who've got the history with the grammar as well. So depending on your level of motivation, this works for other skills as well, where if you go into active use of the field, you can power yourself up really quickly and learn very quickly because you're able to teach yourself, because you have the ample motivation to teach yourself the skill set needed. And this, the reason that school exists is to kind of provide a structure for people's motivational lives. So like as their motivation goes up and goes down and goes up and goes down, there's this very consistent kind of structured learning environment that kind of smooths out the learning in this very assembly line fashion, right? But then what that means is that people who are extremely high on self-learning are kind of like pulled downwards towards the median. People really hot, low on self-learning are pulled upward towards the median. So if you're on the high end of the spectrum at the moment, it makes sense to kind of tackle the art and the craft of game development full force, which means if you're going to study, you should do it in conjunction with trying to work in the field or develop a game or something like that. So all of this, the actual answer to your question depends a lot on your circumstances in life, whether or not you have financial support, how expensive the school is you want to go to, whether or not you have a position at the school, et cetera, et cetera. But my general gut feeling is that for me, I went to school too early. So I went directly after high school and I didn't have the motivation to really get the most out of it. So I failed out of one of my degrees and I accomplished the other one. I had a dual degree. And then I went back 1 year later and I finished the dual degree. And then I had a 6-year hiatus where I was kind of like working in the field and I really learned what it is that I didn't know. And I really learned what I wanted to know. And then I went back for my master's degree and I had insane levels of motivation and I got the most out of my degree. And now I've had another 6-year hiatus and I'm about to go back again for my PhD. And it's the same situation. I'm at the peak of motivation and I will extract the most value from the schooling. So, and both times I went back for my master's degree and now I'm going back for my PhD, it was because I was limited in what I wanted to do by the world. Like I needed the paper or the knowledge that I didn't have access to at the master's level, so I had to go back for it. And I need the paper of my PhD and the knowledge in the laboratories available for my PhD, so I have to go back for that. But if you can get the learning like in the actual like environment of the world, and you're high in motivation, so you don't need the smoothing structure of class to kind of stabilize your learning, I would say like that is probably the fastest way to deal with these fast-changing markets like esport and gaming and stuff like that. By the way, gaming development doesn't necessarily mean computer programming because there's like gaming is so multimedia now. It literally like you need artists, you need musicians, you need composers, you need UX designers, you need level designers, you need people who create the art assets, you need people who create you need people who create the code, you need people who create the model code. So you need people who can like take in natural movement and program it. You need people who can build the AI for the play against. So there's like every single facet of multimedia creation comes into video gaming now. It's like one of the most whole arts out there, even more than movies, I would say. And so depending on your skill set, you can kind of like, yeah. So what I would say, so let's get to the practical advice. I would say test to see if you need the stable learning environment in order to progress. So look for if you have the financial stability to kind of go back to school, you probably have the financial ability to take a non-paid internship. So look for unpaid internships that have to do with game development and start those Code Academy classes. Like start learning C++ like immediately through one of those Code Academies. And on the side, start creating your own game. So you take a 3-pronged approach, okay? You start studying coding immediately. And if you're already studying coding and you already know C++, great. You know, continue it. And then at the same time, you're developing your own game as a hobby. And you start with, you know, those basic like line art games, whatever, and, you know, that are literally hit the top of the app store and make millions of dollars because it's just like a geometry game or whatever. And you move on to that and you start learning the whole spectrum of management. So how to incorporate the multimedia and the music. And maybe you learn how to make, you know, maybe you get one of those little like music pads and you learn how to make digital music and that entices you. So you develop your own hobby game. And at the same time, you apply nonstop to internships, trying to land an internship for game development, whether it's a startup or not. The most important thing is to try to aim for like a AAA company or somebody that already has a successful game is working on a different one, but don't try to avoid landing in a startup that has never launched a game, that is working on a game, and maybe it has a game like most of the way there, but has never launched one or is not selling one successfully. Okay, try to get your foot into a door in an internship in a company that has launched a successful game that has sold and is supporting their company, not as a startup, but as a company, right? They have revenue. Because there you will learn the instead of the purity of the art, where there's a lot of startups that are developing a pure game that's not necessarily going to sell, in a company that has a successful game, you'll learn the compromises you must make to create a game that the market will play. Okay, so that's different, right? So you're making different games, right? There's the reality of crafting art, and there's the reality of crafting a game that people are actually going to play, and like, you know, doing the testing with the market and learning how to do content marketing and PR and all that stuff. So that's all like extra bonus stuff if you can get an internship there. And along the way, what you will do is you will refine and hone your motivation to maybe the exact job that you want to do, and more importantly, you'll see where the holes are. You'll be like, oh, I'm decent at this, and I can learn this from a Code Academy website, but this dude over here, this chick over here, she knows like the math to pull off this and the computer science, like architecture, to really pull off this insane level of understanding of this concept that I can't even touch, like, I don't know, some sort of security protocol or some sort of AI coding or some sort of like, you know, assembly language stuff that you just don't get. And you're like, I want to be able to know that. And then you'll go back to school with very specific knowledge requirements that will boost you from like learning all the average information to learning a very specific specialist kind of information, which is really what you should go to college for, in my opinion, what you should study for. Because if you studied to be a developer and you just go to college and you learn coding, you're really not setting yourself up very well in the market competing with all of like the coders all over the world, in India, for example, and in China, and wherever it is that people can get Eastern Europe, wherever it is people can get cheap coding that is like decent quality. But if you teach yourself coding because you're highly motivated at the moment, and you learn the application of that and you find a specialist area within there that you're like, this is something that I can't learn so well in by like self-learning, and I really need like a background, like I need a good 2 years, 3 years of study to kind of pick it up. Then you go to college and you learn development work, but in a very specific kind of, so you learn development work like with high level math or with security protocols or you know, AI based kind of like folk or machine learning or, you know, some sort of like more advanced progress. Then when you graduate, you're setting yourself up very well to be like a more of a specialist and to have a skill set that is in high demand in the market, and that will set you onto a career, right? So that's what I recommend. That's since you're able to craft it, and since you are doing CBT, so you know the importance of value-driven behavior, that is what I would recommend, and I hope that that was helpful. Speaking of being obsessed with Instagram. Okay, final question, everybody. Let's jump into it. Oh, before I do the final question, here's my broken camera shot. This is when my camera died yesterday, and I'm going to use this shot, which is hilarious, by the way, to promote the MAC program. So check out the Mindfulness Acceptance Commitment Program. It's basically mindfulness-based CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, delivered via videos. So 50 video lectures over 47 video lectures over 49 days, 7 modules, 7 weeks. And I'm going to go ahead and add my... Sorry for those of you listening on the podcast. It's just an advertisement for my Mac program, and the video is hilarious because it froze. But I'm going to add my real video here now. Okay. The Mac program is like my training program, mixture of mindfulness-based performance enhancement, which is heavily based in cognitive behavioral model of therapy. And it is specifically for learning how to increase your performance as... from average to exceptional on a mindfulness-based approach. And every single video is basically a lecture plus a mindfulness training session. And there's 7 weeks and 7 days of videos. You go through all the modules and you graduate and you get a driver's license basically for progress. Not a real driver's license. We're not talking about cars here. But This is not a suitable experience, in my opinion. I don't like that it's... I did the video training because this is the training that I do with teams, and there were a bunch of people asking me, can I do the training too? And I was like, no, because I don't have time, but I'll just record it all and put it online, and then you'll have access to the stuff that I do with pro teams. Great. But it's not like... It's not enough. It doesn't integrate with life enough. It doesn't handle a lot of diversity in terms of like how what people come to the table with their challenges and their levels of motivation and their ability to stay invested in the program. And so so it's just for people who are like super dedicated and self-motivated and want to watch all the programs. Okay, so it's an interesting stuff, and it does motivate you a little bit as you're watching it, so people watch the next one. And a lot of people have graduated. But what I'm really doing with this is creating an app. So your support of the program now, this is how I support this channel, is through sales of this program. If you were thinking of donating or subscribing to Twitch, and you're like, how do I support the program? You can just buy a blank copy of this and not use it, or you can give it away. But at least you get something from it, right? Instead of selling coffee mugs or t-shirts, I'm basically selling this. And you'll get access to the beta when the app comes out. And actually, that's a good idea. I should program it in a way that people can give their accounts away when they're not using them anymore. Like, you can pass them on, you know what I mean? That'd be pretty cool. Anyway, and that's in development right now. And so there's a economic chokehold on the development of this, which is that I'm only supporting it with sales of the program itself. You know, so it kind of like builds itself. And so your support now basically builds the program for the future. So consider it as both a donation receptacle and as an actual program that you might use if you're interested in using it. All right, final question, everybody. Oh, check that out, mindgames.gg/MAC, and use the code ASKWELDON for your discount. Or don't use the code if you want to do full price and support the program even more. All right. And this question is from Christopher, and hopefully my mic is not too loud to pick it up again.
Hi, Weldon. I'm a student right now and don't have a consistent income. So some weeks I can afford to eat full meals, and others I find myself eating a few spoonfuls of rice, beans, and potatoes. I'm currently trying to lose weight and was wondering how detrimental would doing cardio be to my body during these times of low nutrition and caloric intake. Also, which food would you recommend for maintaining cognitive function? Which one food, that is. Thanks for listening.
All right. Which one food would I recommend for maintaining cognitive function? Well, you either have to be in ketosis, which means you're not using glucose, so you can think clearly, which means fasting completely, of course, or doing a fasting mimicking diet, or you have to have glucose. So I think the potatoes are a great one because they're a really complex starch that slowly releases sugar, you know, and is digested over multiple hours. Basically, the slow carb diet, which it sounds like you're kind of eating if you're eating brown rice and potatoes and beans, is a great diet for cognitive functioning because you get kind of sustained carbohydrate intake. For cognitive functioning, like cognitive health, not being just alert during the day, I guess you could say fish oil would probably be the most, vitamin D, the most important micronutrient, the most important food, probably fish oil pills, probably like omega-3 fatty acids, specifically DHA-based ones, probably for brain health. That or vitamin D, I would say. And then if you want a boost, a temporary boost in cognitive functioning, it's going to be caffeine above anything else. Caffeine is going to be the main driver for insane focus. So there's three answers to your question. For general cognitive functioning throughout a day, slow-burning carbohydrates are the best because you don't get a peak in blood sugar and then a massive deficit in blood sugar when your insulin spikes and like pulls all the glucose out of your blood. So slow-carb diet, like what you're eating. Make sure the rice is, you know, fibrous and that you eat it kind of, you know, not in massive piles. If you're talking about instantaneous focus, like you're like, I want to go to a test and I don't have a lot of food, and so I'm low on focus and I need to do well in these classes and tests, then you need to start moderating your caffeine use. So you need to use caffeine as a tool to survive through low through caloric restricted weeks, caloric deficit weeks, but you need to not become accustomed to it so that it stops having its effect. So you need to be like 4 days on coffee, 4 days off coffee, 4 days on coffee, 4 days off coffee, where you're using coffee as kind of like a tool to focus your mind. You never use coffee during the weeks when you have food, for example, and you're set on that. And then if you're talking about cognitive health, then probably the number one go-to thing at this point is vitamin D for mood and fish oil for like general neural health and its impact on degenerative diseases. And specifically DHA-rich fish oil. So it's not really fish oil, right? It's just that fish eat the algae and it concentrates it. So you can actually get like vegan omega-3 fatty acids from, you know, concentrated algae pills. But I think that like krill is the kind of oil that I take, because I think that it has more I can't remember the form of DHA, but there's one that is up that humans can intake multiple forms of the fatty acid molecules, right? But there's one of them where it ends up 10 times as concentrated in your blood serum as other forms. I think it's like phosphorylized. I don't remember the term or the name for it. But anyway, the point is that krill oil and places like fish eggs, like salmon eggs, for example, have lots of this, and straight fish oil kind of doesn't. So it might be a good idea to look into that. And I'm sorry I can't give you a better recommendation right now. I just always take krill oil. So I haven't looked into it in years, so I don't forget all the terminology. But I investigated it a couple of years ago, and then I made a choice, and then I decided to just go with krill oil because then I don't have to think about it or make a choice again. So yeah, that's the answer to your question in kind of a three-pronged tackle approach, because I wasn't sure exactly what you were asking. And if that's not appropriate, please check out my Discord. You can find down below, and you can ask the question in text form in the Ask Weldon channel in the Discord, and we can kind of get into it. You can provide more details, and that'll be great. All right, guys, that's the show for you today. Thank you so much for tuning in. Make sure to check out the Mac program. Apologies for any rambling if the questions were not suitable to you and you were waiting for the next one. And thanks so much for your attention. I will see you tomorrow. Come check out the live show every single day, 7:30 p.m. LA time on blank.tv/mindgamesweldon. And replace the word blank with, you know, the Amazon company that does live streaming for gaming related content, which I'm not going to say on YouTube. That's the show for you today. I hope that you guys enjoyed it. Remember, you can check out the show live at twitch.tv/mindgamesweldon every day, 6:30 p.m. And you can join the pre and post show chat where I answer questions from the audience in depth. We can kind of dig into them deeper because you're there to respond. And make sure that if you check out the Mac program, mindgames.gg/MAC, that you guys use the code podcast. Thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.